This is your podcast for all things refinishing. I'm Lane Ball with Zebra's Before and After. Welcome to Season 3, Episode 9. In this week's show, we announce the winner of the first ever Zebra Furniture Flip. Host Jen Talley will join us today. We'll reflect back on the last few weeks as the participants transformed their ugly ducklings to beautiful swans, and then we'll announce who received the most votes by the public in this exciting event. We are thrilled to bring back our monthly featured artist, and this month we are featuring Mare with 100,000 welcomes. You'll enjoy our conversation with Mare, and she'll provide tips on low-light photography. We'll hear a refinishing tip from Anne Michelle with Amini Design Ashburn, and we'll check in with Kate of Kate's Reclaimed, Ladia with Luna Renewal, and Autumn with Prayed Over Pieces to find out what they are working on in their studios this week. Stay with us. We have the inspiration, fun, and community that will platform your day. Hi, Jen. Wow, the last few weeks have been a bit of a whirlwind, haven't they?
Oh, they really have. It's been so much fun. I can't believe we're finally at the very end of it.
I know. Well, listen, for those of you who maybe aren't familiar with what has been happening, I'll give you a brief overview. Jen reached out to us several months ago with the idea of holding a furniture flip event where we ask refinishers to submit an ugly duckling piece that they wanted to refinish into a beautiful swan. Jen reviewed over 100 entries and chose three that she felt like had the greatest potential. That resulted in our three participants. Those were Candace with Casually Southern, Jeanette with Vintage Roots Painted, and Jess with Refreshed by Jess. Each was challenged with a limited amount of time to refinish their pieces. We shared IGTV and reels along the way for you all to enjoy. By the way, you can go back and watch those IGTV videos on our account, as well as Jen's, our sponsors, and our participants. Once they finished their pieces, they were placed up on our Enjoy Zebra site for the public to vote for their favorite. Oh, and let's not forget our sponsors, Mud Paint, D. Lawless, and of course, Zebra. Each sponsor quickly shipped product chosen by the participants to use in their refinishing pieces. Thank you so much, sponsors. Okay, I'm kind of out of breath at this point. Jen, so how do you think it went? I mean, like, did you enjoy it?
Oh, yes, I enjoyed it so much. I think it went really well. Just like you said, Lane, this was our first time doing it. It was an idea that popped into my head several months ago. So even though we've been talking about it and planning it as much as we could, in a lot of ways, we were also kind of winging it too. So mm-hmm. I think that we learned along the way. It was fun, but it was busy and it was stressful at times. And overall, I think it was great. It was awesome, but we were kind of flying by the seat of our pants for a lot of it. So I think that just made it even more fun, to be honest, though.
Yeah, I think so. And we got a lot, and you've said this as well as others that were involved, got a lot of good feedback. We had people that said, man, that was great. It was really a lot of fun. It was exciting to see the transformations take place. And talk about stress. I mean, just even watching the three participants at times, I was like, man, that's stressful.
You know? It was. I mean, every time I watched their videos or did a check-in with them, I was thinking in the back of my head, thank goodness that's not me. Honestly, I was so excited for them, but I was just like, I can feel it just watching them, you know? So they did a brilliant job.
I know. And I know, I bet many people are like, that's what I go through all the time when I do commission pieces. And you probably know that too, Jen, don't you?
Right. I mean, it is. And I think that like being able to watch it kind of makes you realize like, oh, this actually can be a pretty stressful job. So as much fun as it is, it can be stressful too.
Yeah. Well, you really did a great job of hosting the flip by checking in on our participants and answering their lifeline questions and really encouraging them on. And I know they appreciated you greatly.
It was fun. It was my pleasure.
Well, if you don't mind, take a moment to describe the three pieces, Jen, and what each participant did to create their final results.
Okay, sure. So Jeanette at Vintage Roots Painted had this hodgepodge cabinet that we were calling it. It was just kind of a very, very odd looking piece that I remember when I chose it as one of the finalists, I thought to myself, why would anyone want this in their house? And where would you put it? What would you do with it? It was
Yep.
just very odd. And she completely transformed it.
Yeah.
And it looks so cool now. It's what she did is she painted it in a beautiful navy blue, which is such a classic color. She replaced the doors with this etched glass that is incredible. And she kind of sanded the bottom, like there was like this bottom, it wasn't really feet, it was more like of a skirt part, and she sanded it raw. And it just looks so classic and cool now.
Oh
It's
yeah.
just really good.
She did. She really did. And I remember when I saw it after you chose it, and I thought, okay, just like you, I'm like, who, I mean, you always hate to insult. I mean, I know somebody built that and put their effort into it,
Right.
but you know, it's like you look at it and it's like, did they add on to it as they went? Was it sort of like they didn't really have a plan in mind when they built it? But, and so then I thought, what will she do with this thing? You know? But just as you described, you did a good job describing it, because she really made it one cohesive piece, and not only one cohesive piece, but a beautiful piece. I mean, it really is unique. So that she, Jeanette, did a great job.
Yeah, I agree. I think I've said this before, but it was almost like what she did to that piece was she gave it a make under, because
Yeah.
it was just busy with all the different parts and pieces and wood tones, and she kind of brought it all together and simplified it, and that's exactly what it needed.
Right.
So then the next one was Jess at Refreshed by Jess, and oh my gosh, her piece was the one that I called the hot mess MCM. When I looked at that piece, the reason why I chose it is because even me, someone who does this for a living, and I absolutely love doing that, I probably would have left that piece on the curb. Like, and she bought it. She paid for it. Like, she paid for it. She mentioned that in her story. She was like, yes, you guys, I actually bought this. I paid for it. Whereas I looked at it and I thought, if I saw that on the curb with a big, huge free sign on it, I would hit the gas and drive right by. I mean, it was that bad. Like, it was just this blue color that, you know, that paint was super old, probably lead based. It was just peeling off everywhere, chipping off everywhere. There was stickers on it. The sides of the drawers were painted. It was awful. And what Jess did to that is nothing short of amazing. She stripped off every single speck, stripped and sanded every single speck of that blue paint, and then she painted it this gorgeous coral color, just a really, modern, vibrant shade of coral that is just really cool. And she did some very unique, like, stenciling. She added some modern hardware and modern legs, and it was just like, bam, like, how did you do that? It was so good.
Boy, she really did transform it. And as you said, the color was really pretty in combination with the hardware, and then some, I guess you would say, some embellishments that she incorporated into the piece. It just turned out nice, really nice. Good job, Jess.
Yeah, it was just amazing. And then finally, there is Candace at Casually Southern. And her piece stood out to me when I initially was picking the Ugly Ducklings because it was spray painted in this metallic silver. And underneath that spray paint, I was like, I know this is a beautiful piece under there, because it was like a vintage vanity, with, kind of some ornate detail, spindly legs, just all the stuff that us furniture refinishers love. But that metallic spray paint, I was just like, oh no, like, is this something that someone just completely ruined? Is there any hope for this at
Yeah.
all? And boy, did Candace really do an incredible job. She split the vanity and made it into two nightstands, which she told us on one of the last podcasts that she had never done that before. So kudos to her for like
Yeah.
doing something totally new and, while under the stress of this competition. But she split the vanity apart and made it into these nightstands. And the techniques that she used on those nightstands just blew me away. She did things on those that I have never tried. I have never attempted to try. So I was just really super impressed. She did some shading and blending. She used several different mud paint colors, and the way that she just like blended them into each other was just like effortless. It looked so good. And then on top of that, she did some stenciling on the side. She did this technique, and I don't know if you remember the name of it, Lena. It was like she sprayed some black dust or something
Oh,
on it. Do you know what I'm
yeah, like
talking
a, was it
about?
like a powder coating thing?
Yes,
Yeah.
yes. And when she showed a video of herself doing that, I was like, oh my gosh, what is she doing? I thought she was painting over this beautiful masterpiece, but it wasn't. It just like the black just kind of, she said, like after she sprayed it on, then she wipes it back, and it just kind of gives it this like, more depth and this really cool effect. And wow, it was impressive.
I know. It's funny that you said that because I saw it as well, and I'm like, "What is she doing? I mean, is she just trying to add drama to this thing?
Right? I was like, wait a second, is she starting over? Like, what are you doing?
I know that was hilarious, but man, she as well did just a phenomenal job. And you mentioned the blending, and I mean, and the conversations that we've had on the podcast with so many different refinishers doing multiple different techniques. Blending, as I understand it, is not the easiest thing to do. I mean, because it's got to be smooth and it's got, depending on what you're trying to achieve, but she blended well and she highlighted that as well in her, in the stories. And I'm sure that was picked up on RGTVs that you can go back and watch. But boy, that
Oh
was just a
yeah.
really nice job.
She did great. You're exactly right. Blending is not easy. Anybody can do it, but to get it to look good, that's what's, hard about it. And she just, like I said, it was effortless. It was amazing.
I'm sure all those that went out and voted would definitely say it was tough to choose their favorite. Okay, I know our participants are waiting on the edge of their seats, as well as those that have faithfully followed along to find out who won. So, drum roll, please. Jen, would you do us the honors?
Yes. So after all of the votes have been tallied, the winner of the very first Zebra furniture flip is Jess Randall from Refreshed by Jess. Congratulations, Jess.
Oh, wow. That's such a great job, Jess. That's just terrific. And it is certainly well deserved. You really did have a hot mess when you started, but you overcame your challenges and created a beautiful swan. Jess will be on our podcast next week with Jen as we talk more in depth about how she transformed that hot mess. And we'll talk about her experience with the Zebra Furniture Flip. And you all will be happy to know as well that we are eager to continue on with the Zebra Furniture Flip. We're looking to hold the next one in the fall. And we'll provide more details as we get closer to the date so you can have adequate time to locate your next ugly ducklings. Thanks again, Jen, for all your hard work, and we look forward to next week's conversation with Jess.
Sounds good. I can't wait.
Our featured artist for April is someone you all admire and everyone would call a friend. She has won multiple awards with her refinishing and is always eager to help a fellow refinisher. Today, we're going to get to know her even better. We'll discuss a few of her pieces, and then she's going to provide some tips on the challenges that low-light photography bring. Now, the one and only Mayor with 100,000 welcomes. Hi, Mayor. Welcome back to the podcast.
Oh, hi, Lane. It's great to be here.
Mayor was on our podcast back in 2019. She won first place in the July Zebra Diaries, a contest that we held each month in 2019. Now we host the Zebra Review, also a monthly contest. Mayor's famous china cabinet that was left all natural won, and to this day, I believe it is still talked about. You also did a buffet that was very similar to your natural china buffet or cabinet. I think it was last year, maybe mid-year. Was that, do you know what I'm talking about there? It looked just like the china cabinet.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah, it was the second piece in two pieces actually that came from the same person. So after I had to take a little break after all that sanding, so it was up almost a year after I refinished the buffet, and knowing what was underneath, I really decided I'm just going the same. same route. And yes, it had the similar, very, very similar. It did not go to the same person, but she took a look at it, and then it did go somewhere else. But they're very unique pieces, I have to say, because they have two different types of wood. So when brought back down to raw, they give a real unique finish. So.
That's one of the things that I thought was so beautiful about it is that you get to see, the two different types of wood in one piece. And but there's something different. What made it other than the way it was built and going back to the natural to see those wood grains and the different colors in them, you did something different to them at the end. What was that you did that really gave it sort of a unique look?
Yeah, I did some white waxing to it, and I think that is what really brought out the grain, especially in the cherry. The body of the piece was cherry, and then the doors were a pine.
Yeah.
And funny, prior to the sanding back down, you wouldn't have known that because of the deep dark. It must have been some kind of like a gel stain where you really couldn't see any grain. It just all looked like one solid dark piece of furniture. So, but yeah, getting into the cherry grain with the white wax, it just really made it pop.
It gives it kind of a dreamy look.
I
That's what
agree. Yeah, thank you.
I think. Yeah, it's just really, really pretty. So kudos on that. That's just excellent. Samir, tell us about your family.
I'd love to. My husband and I just celebrated our 30th wedding anniversary in October. We have three children. They are two boys and a girl, and they're three adult children. We have a wedding coming up
Oh,
in
wow.
October. My oldest is getting married. Yeah, so we're really excited about that. And we've spent a lot of time together recently because they've all transplanted home from New York because of the pandemic. So it's five adults in the one house, and my dog is very spoiled because of it. So recently, my oldest did move back to New York, so he's there now, and the other two are working from home indefinitely. So we'll see what happens with that.
Wow, that's so cool. 30 years. You're to
Yeah.
be congratulated to both of
Yeah,
you.
thank
That's
you. Thank
so
you.
neat. And your oldest is getting married, so you're expanding the family. Isn't it
We
amazing
are.
how like it just
Yeah.
things happen quickly, don't they?
And don't blink. That's the good advice, right? Don't blink, because I see so many young families on here, and it's so amazing. And I think, wow, I shouldn't get everything done that they do. I wasn't painting pieces and things like that, so I really admire them. But it is fun to see all the young. But yeah, it brings me right back, let's say.
It's really true when people talk about it's so important to enjoy the stage that you're in because it's easy to look back and reminisce and that's fine. But it's also easy to like want to advance forward,
Right,
but just
right.
enjoy the stages. I mean, because we're in that stage of just, I mean, this year we're getting ready to send our son off to college his
Oh,
first year.
wow.
I have a 15-year-old daughter and a 9-year-old daughter. So we've got an interesting span of different ages,
Yes.
but it's like, I feel like I'm like, Jack was just 9
I know.
yesterday and now he's
Yeah.
18. It's just so
It goes
crazy.
by so quickly. It really does. So.
Now, Mary, you live in Connecticut?
I do. I live in Stratford, Connecticut. It's in like the southwest portion of the state. I've been born and raised here, and I'm still here. So
Wow.
I'm a native.
You've got a lot of relationships you've had probably since you were a kid.
Yeah, and my family, a lot of my family is still here, so that's enjoyable. I love that. And my husband's also from the area, and so yeah, and we settled here.
Okay. Now, how far are you from New York City?
Oh, on a good day with traffic,
Depends,
and
right?
yeah, it depends. But it's funny, I have three children, and my oldest is now living in New York and works in New York. And we just went down there the other evening to deliver a piece of furniture to him, and we made out really well, like just shy of an hour, which often doesn't happen, but we hit it right. So I think with everyone kind of being having stay at home and work from home still, it's helping the traffic a little bit.
Yeah. Now, if I'm not mistaken, I believe Danielle and Evan from Pottery Barn also live in your area. You may have to look them up if you don't know them already.
I do. We've been in contact. We haven't met in person, but yeah, they're from my town and they're absolutely amazing. I love all of their pieces and we kind of communicate a little through Instagram, which is really nice. They're, I think, going to be moving, but just about 10 minutes away. So,
Yeah.
but
Oh,
yeah,
that's cool.
really nice couple.
A lot of phenomenal work coming out of that
But well, from them, yeah, thank you so
Oh,
much,
no.
but I agree wholeheartedly.
Yeah, no, I mean, I say that collectively from all of you guys. You guys are doing just really beautiful work.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks so much.
So, what's your weather like there today?
Today is beautiful. We're going to be, if we're not yet, we're in the, going to be in the 60s. The sun is out. So
Wow.
a great spring day. We have that to look forward to this week. Last week we closed out the week with some very chilly sleet rain. Friday was freezing, so that's New England for you.
Yeah, it's volatile, isn't it?
It is. It can change.
So now that you guys have hit the 60s, we're in mid-April, heading toward the latter part of April. When do you cross the bridge to the good weather's here to stay? Like, is that end of May, or what's the
Yeah,
timing?
that's a good question. Some parts of Connecticut, not my area, had some snow on Friday. So, you just don't know. But May is usually a really beautiful month, so we're getting there. End of April. April, the only problem with April, we can have some beautiful weather, but it does get a little rainy around here. So, May is usually, as I said, a really beautiful month. And the rule of thumb around here, and actually maybe it's in a few different areas, is you can do your planting on Mother's Day. So that's general rule of thumb. You can put out your annuals, and there's a lot of blooming. You can do a lot of your gardening on Mother's Day. So
Oh, well, that's sweet. Well, that's interesting
yes.
because down here, because we're further south, our day is April 15th, which is not as sweet because that's
Oh.
tax day.
That's right.
So,
That's right. You'll wallow in
exactly. Exactly
the
right. Oh, I love checking up on the weather, so that's great to hear. Now, Namir, how long have you been refinishing?
Actually, for a few years, I would describe it as I started with every refinisher's worst nightmare. We had two rocking chairs that were a gift when we moved into our home in 1998, and I kept looking at the rockers, and they were in that hunter green that was popular in the 90s. And I was like, oh, I have to do something with those rockers, but I really love them. And there was a bit of sentiment involved because they were from my husband's grandparents. And I was like, oh, I want to do something with them. And I was like, oh, that's a project. I couldn't even imagine like having to pick up a sander, which now is, an everyday occurrence. But I was like, oh, what am I going to do? So I did some research and I bought some chalk paint and I chalk painted them, and it was I will remember the day. It was like clear blue skied fall day, and I had them out in my driveway, and I was like, oh, this is just amazing. And it's kind of funny because now, all those years ago, I don't know if that was like 2016, 2017, and they're very shabby chic. I have to probably redo them, but I've still kept them. They're still on my front porch, on either side of my front door. So that's how it started.
Oh, that's cool. Those are your trophies.
Yeah,
That's so neat.
exactly. They need some work now, though, I will tell you that.
I like that. So, what's your favorite part of refinishing?
For me, I really love to get to the painting of refinishing in the refinishing world. The prep, though, is the most important step, and you cannot skip it. There's no ends about it. But I love the painting. I really like the research of it. Like, if you can find a maker's mark, or if you can find any information in the pieces, I find that kind of fascinating, like the first life of a piece, especially the older pieces. So you get clues from the age of a piece, and it's always so amazing to wonder where it's come from, or so I like that part as well. But once the prep is done, there's that huge sigh of relief. So that I love seeing it come to life,
Yeah.
kind of.
Man, you just, I just jotted a note because when you said researching the piece, that's like a whole nother podcast. We're going to have you back on to talk about what you go through to find, the history of a piece, because that is like, that's so exciting. It's sort of like, ancestry.com or just finding out about your ancestry, with your lineage and your family and the different, you look at your dad's side, your mom's side, and you start tracing it back. When you get these furniture pieces, all the history, is just, I mean, that makes it so exciting.
Yeah, it is kind of a very exciting, so fascinating part of it. And you're right, it's a whole nother section because it can take some time. So I want to say, Lynn, I've also had, at some points, I've had people respond to my stories, other refinishers, and they're like, oh, hey, I found this for you. When I talk about, hey, can anyone, tell me what does this look like to you? Or
Yes.
so it's been really helpful in the community. So I think we all have a shared love for it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. That may be a cool podcast to do with you and maybe even a couple other people who seem to really enjoy that, just to get a combined effort of what you guys do to go through that process.
No,
So
I agree. It's interesting for sure.
I asked you what your favorite part is. I may know what your least favorite part is. You may have clued in a little bit, but I don't want to
Yeah.
assume. So what is the part that you kind of like, ugh, you dread a little bit when you're doing refinishing?
I don't think I'm alone when I say the prep, but I do think it's absolutely, there's no skipping steps. Let's put it that way. You cannot skip the steps. So I think it's just a little bit of a necessary evil, and but it does ensure a beautiful finish. So yeah,
Yeah.
that is the tough part, the kind of the getting in there, the cleaning, the
Right.
filling, things like that. But
Yeah.
I can't say that. It's all a part of it. Let's put it that way. So
And it's, I guess it's one of those things too. If you're starting out and, you're just so eager to get to the painting and you're like, ugh, I'll skip this part, or I won't spend as much time as I probably should. You'll end up learning the hard way, don't you?
exactly. Yeah, you do. Yeah, you do. There's no way around it. There's no such thing as really no prep paint. So
Yeah.
I think we'll all agree on that.
Speaking of prepping, and you think about the cleaning, of course, but then when you get into the sanding, have you found yourself changing course on your design objectives when you start sanding a piece, or has that design objective already in place, when you're sanding?
Yeah, that's funny that you mentioned that because the piece that we discussed, the two raw pieces, I really was just starting on the first one back in 2019. I was really just starting a prep sand. And all is like with a sanding pad, not even a sander, the old finish just started to come off. And that was definitely a change course. So for me, I have an idea, but oftentimes it's not set in stone. I kind of have to make adjustments. Things might change, or I might say, hey, these legs would look amazing, raw or something like that. So when I'm not, so yeah, it's kind of still the process point. So in that way, the prep is really helpful to kind of solidify what you want to do. So unless you're doing some custom work where someone has their own ideas, so.
Yeah, I'm curious, speaking of sanding, because it is such a task-oriented part of the refinishing, what do you use for sanding?
Well, right now we have a Festool sander, and it has the whole vacuum extraction attached to it, so that's been amazing. It right now I also have the Surf Prep head that goes with it, which is also amazing. They're kind of, I'm lucky enough to have both. My husband's a very like gadgety, he loves tools, things like that. So he likes getting his hands on both. But yeah, so that is, it's nice to have both, and there's a reason to have both. So for us, that's what worked. But I've had my Festool for a few years, and then I was always watching the Instagram stories with people using the Surf Prep for the detailed sanding and the scuff sanding, and I was like, wow, that can really save some time. So yeah, I'm lucky enough to have both.
Yeah, there's something too about watching on social media people sanding with Surf Prep. They've done a good job with the marketing side of it, because when you watch people sand, it's like you just want to start doing that,
Oh,
because you
it's
see those foam
mesmerizing.
abrasions.
Yeah. It is. It's mesmerizing, and it's great. They're both like great design to both of those sanders. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
So, we talked about your favorite part. We talked about your part that you just, not too crazy about, but would you say that, the part that you excel in is the same as your favorite? What do you think that you excel in when it comes to refinishing the most as far as the different aspects of it?
Oh, wow, that's a tough question. I almost feel like I can do a little bit of everything. I don't know if I'm a little bit with like all the stages, like, and what would I excel in? That's a really tough one, Lane. He's going to stump me on this one. I'm just not sure. Maybe it's, I'd like to think it was the color choice. I don't know. I would like to think possibly color choice, but I am an overthinker and I think I need to learn to just, go for it if something speaks to me. So.
No, I asked that question because I think that, once you think about it and you share it, I think you're probably spot on because I think the bottom line is what you excel at is what you enjoy. And so if you enjoy choosing color, then that is what you excel at. So that's great. And I, obviously I'm not surprised in the least when you look at your feed and check out what you've done and been able to accomplish. Obviously your colors are spot on as well as multiple other aspects of refinishing. So what's your favorite style of furniture?
Yeah, another tough question, but if I were going to pick one favorite, and I think I talk about like, oh, if I'm on a deserted island, what I would take with me. But I think that my favorite pieces are the Hepplewhite, the Duncan Fife style, Beaufront, anything. There's so many different pieces. So you can have like the chest of drawers, a double dresser, the low dressers, even the little drop leaf side table. So just anywhere in that era. And I think like everyone will know what I'm talking about. Hepplewhite hardware is kind of, everyone knows what that is. And I usually don't replace that at all. But I would have to say that they are my favorite piece to work on, to see in people's feeds. And one of the reasons why is that they're usually really well built and they're just really solid. You might also call them like the federal style of furniture, I guess. And they generally can uphold. I've seen them and done some of different finishes on them. So they look beautiful raw. You can use milk paint or distress them. You can get chipping on them and they can still handle it. They can go clean and classic. They can also, they're a great base for if people, I've yet to do this, but I've seen beautiful transfers on the Hepplewhite pieces. So I just think it's something that, your imagination is the limit. They hold up and they always look good. So just my opinion.
Yeah, no, that's great. Do you find the Hepplewhite are hard to locate, Hepplewhite pieces?
I've been able to come across a lot of them, and kind of a funny thing, right after I recently did a white Hepplewhite buffet, I painted it white, and I was just talking on my stories about how much I love Hepplewhite, and then I found two pieces that I went to get to, a tall a set. It was like a tall chest on chest, and then a lower chest. So then those were in my garage, and then I had a custom customer come with six pieces and they're all Hepplewhite and I was like, whoa, is this too much of a good thing? I'm not sure. I was kind of like, what did I wish for? But no, I love them all. But if you could see, and then while I had the buffet, I was like, I have seven large pieces of Hepplewhite here, so dreams do come true.
Oh, that's cool. You're getting those for sure.
Yes.
Well, what about paint? Like, what would you say you're like if you had if somebody said, "Yeah, go back to the stranded on a
The
desert island
stranded on the
again."
island,
That's a
yeah.
great analogy. What paint would you have to have? Obviously, you got furniture on that island. You got your Hepplewhite.
I got my Hepplewhite, and I'm going to think about my paint. And I do feel, I think that many of us feel the same way, that there's a certain paint for each type of finish. So I still feel that way. However, if I'm going to pick one, I'm going to go with milk paint. And if you look at my feed, you may think like, oh, I want, there's not too, she has a lot of clean looking pieces on there. But the reason is you can go any way of the spectrum with milk paint. You can add the special bonding agent or the super bond and really go clean if you want. So that's why it can go from chippy, super farmhouse to super clean. So I think that's why I would go with that. And it just gives such a unique and beautiful finish. Even if you don't have chipping or distressing, you kind of can get, if you want, you can get a little color variation, things like that. So just a beautiful paint to work with. And it takes a while though. It's not, there's a bit of a learning curve, and it's not to be to make that sound intimidating, but at first I really had to gear up and buy that milk paint and say, okay, here we go. So
And one of the things I like about it is it's really thin, which, if I was painting in a, I mean, obviously if I was painting a wall or in a house or painting trim, I don't want my paint to be thin. But with milk paint, knowing what you're going to achieve with it, it just all makes sense. But it's just kind of a neat, refreshing thing to use paint that's that thin. And I love to see how it dries. Not just the chipping, but it's fun to watch it dry because it sort of takes on a new tone. It's just that, I don't know, it's just kind of a cool thing. And there's so many surprises in it.
Yeah, I agree that, it does take on a different hue, and then I love the sanding part, and then you finish it with either like an oil or you can use a wax, and then all of a sudden the true beauty comes out. So yeah, it is beautiful to sit back and look at that. So it makes it a little fun, a little surprise. So
Well, so how much of your business is commission?
oh, that's a hard question because it kind of goes in spurts. So right now, before Christmas, I had quite a bit. Late fall, I had some commission work, and now this is going to be my first. It's kind of like a whole bedroom suite, so it's going to take me a little while anyway. But yeah, so I haven't done any yet in 2021. So it just kind of, I have a few customers that I will generally always take their work. So I don't. I don't always take it on, but that's a hard question. I would have to say, I don't know, maybe it's like 60, 40, 70, 30, the lower number being the custom work. So
Do you, and because a lot of people have commented on this, that commission brings an extra level of stress. Do you find that, or do you like kind of like the challenge of it?
it can be stressful, yes. It has its perks in saying like, okay, this is guaranteed, but I feel as though it can be a little stressful. You know, the communication part is key to make sure that you and your customer are on the same page. And there's a lot, I don't know what we did before iPhones, right? Sending photos back and forth,
I
things
know.
like that. So yeah, so just it's, I usually now for this, for example, what I'm doing now is it's a little tougher when people don't understand, like, or it's let's put it this way, it's a little easier to work with people that have an idea of ranges of color and things like that, because someone just says, oh, they want something white. Well, there's just white. Well, there's a lot that goes into it. You can have, as everyone knows, this is nothing new. You can have like a yellow white, a brown white, a gray white, a purple white. So just finding that exactly what they want. Sometimes it's pulling it out of them. Sometimes it's sample drawers, sample boards, always, things like that. So it does add a little bit more stress. So, but if they're happy, I'm happy.
Yeah, and it's almost like you got to do a little bit of extra work just to assure that they're going to be happy so that they're more informed, especially with a color, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I do have a couple clients who say, oh, do it, just what would you do? And then, I used to be very hesitant to go in on that, but now I just say, okay, I'm going to tell you what I would do. This is what I would do, or we go along the way, or like, hey, you know what I do with this? And what do you think? And not that it's written in stone. I'm completely open when obviously it's someone else's home, someone else's piece, but I think they're coming to me to do that for a reason. So I like to be able to, and I guess that's as your confidence grows and the more pieces that you've done, you're able to guide them with their choices.
I think too, it's such an interesting industry because, and we've talked about this so often, but every piece is unique because it's done by an artist. It's not done in a factory, and it's not mass produced. And so, when somebody comes to you, they come to you because they like what you've done. They're wanting a piece in their home, and they, color's important, so that makes sense. You can't really fudge on the color, but it's probably so important to convey, look, just like you commission a canvas painter or an artist to do a painting, I've got to have latitude there with the furniture piece as well, because you're not going to get a piece, especially depending on the style, it's not going to be flawless. There's going to be some things. And so if you get somebody who's extremely meticulous in particular, and they think they're going to find, they're looking for flaws, then it's almost like they're not really understanding the furniture finishing industry and what it produces and what it's all about, I would imagine. And that becomes a challenge, because then you're trying to just, you're nitpicking everything. Yeah, when
exactly. So
that's the whole point, is like, right. This was done by, you commissioned an artist to paint this piece of furniture. And so there's some subjective elements to it, that are going to be seen in the piece.
Every piece, every vintage piece usually has its own character. So sometimes it's important to let that shine through.
Yeah.
And as you said, hopefully they're coming to you because of your style, so there's a certain amount of trust as well. So.
Here, we talked about, you've got plenty of help await to work with. But I'm just curious, because, in my mind, I'm sort of an analytical guy, so I'm thinking in terms of, like, where we are today. And the furniture refinishing industry, excitingly so, is growing. A lot of people are stepping into the industry and finding talents, and it's nice because we're bringing attention to this business. But, I'm always thinking, like, okay, are pieces harder to find now than they were, 2 years ago? Are you finding that is still the same flow of pieces, or are you finding that the pieces are harder to find? And even from a cost standpoint, are prices going up?
I do think that prices are going up for sure. I haven't had too much of a problem finding pieces, much to my husband's dismay, because of the storage issues. The poor guy lost his garage, but anyway, I don't have trouble finding them. They are priced a bit higher now, though, yeah. I would say. And, I will check Marketplace. I do go to the restores, and every once in a while, if I see a tag sale, I might stop if I see something. There's something else that goes on. There's a lot of, in my area, the online estate sales. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the pieces will start at $1, and they obviously go up, but that's what's been popular here. I don't know if everyone across the country has seen that, but there's been so many. And once you get on the list, you get notified of that often. So I do always, like, I kind of have a look through them when they come through. And sometimes the prices are just out of my reach for sure. And not economical for what I'm going to do, try to resell it. So, but yeah, I will hit up the restores. And when the weather gets nicer, maybe there's some yard sales, I might see something. So not hard to find, but definitely a little pricier.
Yeah. Now, that's so interesting. Online estate sales. I don't know if that's maybe, I'm not really familiar with that. So that's really the first I'd heard of that. Is that because of the pandemic?
I'm not sure. It actually, for me, started a little bit before the pandemic, but I think it's kind of taken off because of the pandemic. So you still have to go to the home and, you pick it up there. You do the bidding online. And
is it all live?
No, it's all done. There's a time limit. There's a countdown. It counts backwards, and there's
so it's kind of like eBay,
in a way. Yeah, except you're going to a local home to then pick it up, or a warehouse or whatever. So yeah,
right. Okay. Have you ever found a piece just on the side of the road for free?
Oh yeah, yeah. That, my sister is a great finder for me, because she walks her dog constantly. And so she's always like, hey, I just saw this. So
does she like hang out there over the piece?
Isn't that funny? She'll snap a picture. I don't know what we did before iPhones, but she'll say, oh, what do you think? And I'm like, oh yeah, I kind of like that. So then I have to see if it's still there. So if it's meant to be, it's still there. So
yeah, I hear about that all the time. And I'm like, I guess, I know, of course, I've said this before, we live in the country. So it's not like you're living in a neighborhood where there's, tons of that. But I just don't ever see, like, if I do see anything on the side of the road, it may be an old mattress. So it's like, it doesn't have any value.
Nobody wants that. Yeah.
That's right.
Exactly. Exactly.
So when I see people online saying, you know, especially I see this a lot with Kristen and with Chateau, and I'm like, how in the world do you like find these like really cool pieces?
Oh, you're not kidding. Yeah, she gets some amazing scores. Yeah. I know. Yeah.
That's so, just amazing. So yeah. I'm like, I think I would definitely stop if I saw a nice piece on the side of the road for sure.
Yeah, it's exciting. And you're helping the people out. They obviously put it out there so they don't have to go get rid of it. So,
yeah,
it's that's one way to look at it. But yeah.
Mary, you do a great job photographing your pieces. And we're going to discuss low light photography at the end of our show after we discuss a few of your pieces. But I'd love for us to dive into those pieces. And the first piece we'll discuss is a beautiful secretary desk. It's very unusual. It has a lot of detail on the outside. And I know you mentioned in the post that at the time, you had listed it, or you hadn't listed it, but I think you said something about the fact that you really weren't sure that you wanted to list it because you were really wanting to keep it. Did you end up keeping it?
I think it's the one that got away. I did sell that piece, and it was very popular, and it sold very quickly. And maybe if there was a pause, I may not have moved forward, but yeah, I did sell that piece, and it, now I look back and think, oh gosh, it was so unique and I didn't even realize it, but it was a really, that's a beautiful, like a slant front, Jacobean style mm-hmm. with the, scroll work and raised detail. The legs were carved. That was just a beautiful piece. So that piece was probably like early 1900s. And what I got from the person that I got it from was it was from the West Point Armory, like a secretary desk from the West Point Armory, which is in New York State. And I almost didn't want it at first. I got a picture of it. My a funny thing is acquaintance of my brother, and he's like, oh, hey, what do you think of this? And, you know, it's funny. Once you start doing this, people say, hey, can you ask your sister if she wants this, or hey, I have this furniture. And it's really, it's so nice when people do that. But so it was kind of, you know, sent me a picture and I was like, oh, I don't know. This looks big. And I was a little bit intimidated by all of the detail. And I was like, I just don't know if that's my style. And he's like, no, I think, you know, it's not big, you know, you're going to be surprised. And it was a much smaller piece than you usually see in that style. Mm-hmm. So when I got it, it was just so unique and petite. It was just so very, very well done. Inside of it, after we took out the interior part of the secretary, I found a little photo of a woman in like a Gatsby style, like cloche, like definitely from the 20s, a little cloche hat. So cute. And like a little parts of an address book. So that was really unique. I love those finds, you know, so it gave me kind of, once again, those clues to where this piece had come from and, or who was using it, you know, things like that. So yeah, it was a beautiful piece. So
did you have to do anything structurally to it, or was it in good shape structurally?
No, that was in really good shape. It may have been like minor, you know, little minor things. I think, it had the key and a working key, and that's uh-huh. how you open the drop front and the cabinet top. And that may have needed a little fill or a little like adjustment with one of the locks, or maybe I had to buy an escutcheon plate, but that was it. That was in pretty good shape. I have to say it was beautiful. And the interior with that piece too, the little drawers were hand carved. It was just a beautiful, beautiful piece.
I'm looking at the picture on the outside and on the inside with the top down. And you talk about color earlier. I mean, the color is just really beautiful on this. I love the white on the outside, and it's almost like, is it like a blue-gray on the inside?
Yeah, it's the faintest. Funny, if the color gray can almost look white if it's not paired with white. But yeah, it was a really good combination. I agree. Thank you.
Yeah, and then what you did to the legs, because you allowed those to be exposed, yet you blended them well by, is that also like a white wax, or what did you do to the legs?
Yeah, they were, you know, the carved legs, hand carved legs. So sanded them back and then highlighted them with a white wax, which when anything's detailed like that, it does kind of grab onto the wax. So it gives it such a beautiful look. Really soft, kind of softens it and then blends it back to the solid white of the piece.
Yeah, I think that's what's neat about the colors that you chose, and you just use that word soften, because that's what, you know, because the Jacobean is sort of a, has sort of a masculine look to it.
Right.
And then you softened it, so it just sort of completed it nicely. I bet you do kind of think, man, I wish I had kept that.
I know now, the more I talk about it.
Well, I hope whoever has it is enjoying it.
Yeah, I hope so too. I do. I do. I think so. So that was the first time I had done, not the first time, but I actually did some glazing in the recess of the detail, just a little bit to highlight it. So yeah. That kind of was a fun thing to do too.
Well, very good job.
Thank you.
Well, this next piece is another beautiful piece. It's a sideboard, and it too is quite unique. Tell us about this piece. Describe it for our listeners.
Oh, yeah, sure. This is what I guess I would call a barley twist sideboard. It has the barley twist legs, which are kind of, I don't know, maybe you describe them as spiral legs. And this was probably, I would estimate that to be maybe from the 30s or 40s. And, you know, it was just a brown piece of furniture, you know, has some unique, like, beading on the beaded trim around the doors.
Yeah.
And as I said, the barley twist, it had drawers and cabinetry as well. What else? That was painted in a custom mix of milk paint. And I love this mix. It was a lightened version of Magnolia Pier. By Shakhtar Interiors, which just, it's a beautiful, like a deep brown, but I lightened it up with a bit of white.
Uh-huh.
And it just, I've used that mix before and I love that. And it just, I don't know, it just suited the piece so well. I got some chipping and a little more like distressing. We sanded back the top and did like a medium brown, like a driftwood type of stain on there. And it's, oh, a funny thing about that, I bought that on Facebook Marketplace, and then when I got home with it the next day, got a message from the person that I bought it from, said, oh, guess what? Hey, guess what? I just found the mirror. So it was a separate, like a backplate with the round mirror in it, like a little tavern mirror. It was very cute.
Yeah.
Went back and got it. So, anyway, I was happy to have that part.
Did they charge you additionally for that, or did they say
no,
just pick
no,
up?
No, they didn't. Yeah,
oh,
no,
good.
They didn't. Like, so I guess they used it without the mirror, but when you have a mirror from a piece that age, there's usually a spot for it in the back. So I was happy to have that. Number one, it added a lot to the piece, but number two, then you have to somehow fill that slot in the back, you know? So
yeah.
Anyway, it fit right in there, so. That was another favorite of mine.
Isn't it funny when you look at a piece and you look at all the different parts, and like when you were talking about it, I put my pin over that portion that you got later with the mirror.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it still would be pretty, but I don't know, that just really sealed
yeah,
it.
Yeah, they belong together. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
So
that's so neat. Now, did you, when you were doing the painting with the milk paint, did you get the amount of chippiness that you wanted?
Well, I just kind of went for it with this piece, and it was an older piece. And the thing is with milk paint, a lot of times if you do a lot of sanding, it will kind of, the paint kind of soaks in and doesn't chip.
Yeah.
And this needed a lot of prep. So I think that's why I didn't get too much chipping, that I did get, you know, I could distress it back so nicely. So I don't know. I think it was just the right amount. So I was really happy with it.
Yeah, no, I think so too. And that's why I asked that, because it's just neat. Like even how the top right of that mirror in the back, you know, balances well with some of the chippiness that took place on the front.
Yeah, it all tied in.
Now, the beaded, I don't know what you call that.
Yeah, like a trim on the, or molding or trim. Yeah,
the
yeah.
beaded trim. Like if somebody has a piece like that, and let's say they don't have a surf prep, what suggestions, any suggestions for if they want to sand that? Like, is that just like a lot of hand sanding?
God, I'm not sure that I had the surf prep yet when I did this. I just can't remember that. But yeah, you know what? I would use one of the pads. Actually you can order the surf prep pads or the Festool pads. They're like
uh-huh.
soft sanding pads. They come
yeah.
in many different grips, and you can just do it with some hand sanding
yeah.
and that works perfectly. You know, they won't like knock down the round part. They won't knock down the detail.
Yeah.
So, which is really nice. It keeps it, you know, as it was.
Yeah, you don't have to make any additional repairs.
But it's funny, Lane, that you mentioned that. You mentioned that trim. I had so many people after I posted the piece, potential buyers or, whatever, say, did you add the beaded trim? I don't know if they thought it was like tax, and I said, no, that's original. That would have been a job, but
Yeah, for sure. Wow. Yeah, I know, because when you're sanding anything with detail, that's part of the fear. You're trying to get it back to its, natural carving or tones, but you don't want to knock it off. I mean, you don't want to obliterate it as you're trying to do that.
A soft sanding pad really works really well, so that's a good thing for people that don't have
Yeah.
a surf prep rather.
Yeah, very good. Well, good advice on that. Nice job as well. Well, this last piece
Thank you.
we'll discuss is your favorite. It's a white Hepplewhite. We're not surprised after our conversation.
Exactly. Thank you. That was the latest piece, one of the latest pieces that I have done. And it's funny, it's really hard to be objective about your pieces or say, oh, that was my favorite, because I appreciate the two we're speaking about, because they definitely, if they weren't one, they were two and three. So appreciate that. But this one, and I think I chose it as when you asked my favorite piece, was because it was one of the one times where I had saw a piece, I had a vision for it, and it kind of all came into being, let's say. And we talked about things change, and things change as you go through the refinishing process. So I was lucky enough to have a vision for the piece. I knew that I wanted it to go light and airy. It was just really dark and dated, but it had a really unique shape to it. It had the bow front, it had some recessed areas, and I thought the white paint would just really highlight that. But guess what? It was mahogany, so anyone knows that, if you're going white over a mahogany piece, that you have your work cut out for you. So I was lucky though. Did the prep, did all the priming, was able to get through it without bleed through, which was amazing because it was primed though, many coats of primer. And then the top, I was thinking, okay, I'm just going to paint the top. And it was funny because that was a piece that I had purchased that had a sign on it that said as is. And I kept looking at the piece thinking, as is what? I've done thing, this looks pretty good to me. That's what I'm thinking. But there was a large like watermark stain on the top, and there was a chunk out of the foot that I filled with Bondo and molded back. And so the top had to be either painted or sanded back. And I wasn't sure how deep that stain or that almost like a burn or a stain went. And I was lucky. I was able to get it back to a natural, but it was a pink top. So I did a bleaching, which I'd done one other time before. I have the bleach kit that's very popular that everyone is using. It's a two-part kit by Zinsser, and I did one round, and it was like, oh yeah, okay, we're getting there, we're getting there. But it was still, you could just see the pink and purple just bubbling out of the gray. And I was like, okay, let's go, we're gonna go for two. Two's gonna do it, two's gonna do it. Did the second round, got a little bit better. Okay, I waited, and then I started to say, all right, how many rounds can I do? So that's when I reached out to some old friends of mine on here, and well, not old, young, let's
Yeah.
say. Nancy from Viv and Violets, and I was like, hey Nancy, you're my expert bleacher here, what do you think? She's like, all right, well, you can go. I have done cherry wood three times, and without a problem. But you know what? Check with Sarah. She just did mahogany. And I was like, okay. So contact Sarah, and I was like, hey Sarah, you did a mahogany top that you bleached? Yeah, I did it three times. And she's like, it's okay, you can go to three. And then she told me how to like neutralize the wash I was going to use on the top, and that was amazing advice. So I'm so grateful to both of them, because and so many others. You just reach out and, hey, what did you do here? Or and not exactly, I'm not looking for anyone's secret formula, but just like, hey, did you do that? I thought I remembered that. So that's like such a blessing. I was able to do the third round of bleach, and then I put it out in the sun. We had a nice sunny day, and I think that helped. Did the wash, and I like it just it came out so beautifully. I was so happy because in the back of my mind, I was like, well, if I have to, I'm just going to prime the top and we'll just have a whole solid piece. But I was so happy to have that little bit of to be able to show off that beautiful top, the beautiful grain.
And it works so well with the piece. Now, when you are trying to cover up or stop bleed through, do you, and let's say you've gone through all the priming steps, is it possible that even after it dries over time, it will come back through? Or is it once it's dry, you see what you see? I mean, it's not going to get any worse.
Yeah, well, that's funny because you can, if you use another water-based product to seal your piece, you can get a surprise then as well.
I see,
And I was
yeah.
lucky. I did, my piece was sealed with a water-based poly, so if it was going to happen, I would think it would have happened, So I know people say, oh, white pieces can yellow over time, but I've not had that experience, luckily, or have anyone come back to me, So
Yeah.
I always make sure with the care card to tell them, get the longest last out of your finish to don't use any chemicals or cleansers. You might just need the slightest damp cloth to wipe it down. So things like that. But I would say if you skip priming and still think, oh, I didn't get bleed through, down the road, you may get some yellowing.
Yeah.
So I make sure I pretty much prime all of the pieces that I sell.
Did you say you used three coats of primer on
I
this on
did.
the body?
I did. Yeah,
Do
I
you
did.
also do shellac first, or is that an either or? You can do shellac
Yeah,
or you.
you can use an either or. I do like knowing that I was going white, I used Bin, and it is white to begin with. So you can use, there's clear primers on the market. A lot of the different paint lines have clear primers, which I'm not sure if they're shellac based or not, but I use the Bin shellac base, but you can also use shellac.
Yeah, that's helpful on the priming, because I've seen people do the shellac, seen people do, multiple coats of priming. So I know that's insightful. Well, these are all really beautiful, Mare, as well as all of your pieces are just people can go through your feed and see and enjoy your work. Listeners, you can enjoy more of Mare's work on our blog that is located on our enjoyzebra.com site. Where she is our April feature. We're so excited about that. And we'll return shortly to discuss the challenges of low light photography with Mare. Support for Zebra's Before and After comes from Zebra, the brush company that produces application-specific paintbrushes that will literally change your paint life. Whether you are painting a room, creating a craft, or refinishing a furniture piece, Zebra has you covered. Each one of our thoughtfully designed brushes has a specific purpose in mind, and each one is packed with unique and proprietary filaments that are smaller in diameter, allowing us to give you 25% more filament pack out than your standard brush. That translates to smooth finishes and fun brushing. Zebra brushes give you the opportunity to fill your work and guide it to your desired destination. Enjoy and paint on. Today's refinishing tip comes from Anne Michelle with Amini Design Ashburn.
Hi, this is Anne Michelle with Amini Design Ashburn, and I have a quick tip on how to fix lifting veneer. You will need wood glue, clamps, a thin piece of wood such as a stir stick, and a needle tip with a syringe. You can get these off of Amazon. So because we work on antique and vintage furniture, a lot of the time the veneer will start to lift on the edges. This is pretty common and it's actually quite simple fix. What you will do is take your syringe and fill it with the wood glue. You're going to insert that syringe into the opening where the veneer is lifting. Push your glue inside. Once it's spread out nicely, you're going to take your thin piece of wood and apply it on top of the lifting veneer. You're going to take your clamps, clamp it over that piece of wood, use a damp paper towel, shop towel, whatever you have, wipe away the excess glue. Once your glue is dry, you remove those clamps and your veneer should be nice and secure again. This is a pretty simple fix, and let me know if you try it and the results you have. I'd love to hear about it. Thanks for listening.
Working with veneer and refinishing is so much a part of the daily life of refinishers, so this is a great tip to help resolve some minor veneer issues. Thank you, Anne Michelle. time to hear what your refinishing friends are up to. Here are a few reporting on what they're working on in their studios this week.
Hi, my name is Kate Buffington from Kate's Reclaimed, and my Instagram handle is Kate's Reclaimed. Currently, I just finished a mid-century modern buffet for a friend, an empire leg dresser that just sold, and I'm starting work on a custom piece for a client that is a three-drawer dresser. I have sanded the whole piece, bondoed a few areas where there were some chipping veneer. I need to go back over and do a little bit of wood filler on a few spots, and then it's time to prime. So that's what I'm working on. I hope that you all have a great day.
Hi, everyone. This is Letty, and I'm the owner of Luna Renewal. This week, with my zebra paintbrushes, I'll be working on three custom orders. I'll be finishing up a client's credenza. After that, I'll move to a small dresser for a little girl's bedroom. It's going to be pink with gold hardware. I'm very excited about it. And after that, I'm also excited about starting a different client's credenza. To follow my progress, check my Instagram at Luna Renewal. Thank you, and I hope everyone has a productive week.
Hi, this is Autumn with Prayed Over Pieces. In my studio this week, I'm working on an amazing vintage buffet. I'm pretty sure it dates back at least 100 years, so, you know, no pressure on me, right? It's a custom piece for a client that's oozing with details. It's that Jacobean style that's gorgeous, and it has a lot of wear and tear, so I'll be doing a lot of repairs with wood putty and sanding down the top. The piece is different from most of my other pieces because it won't be painted. I'll be leaving the natural wood, but adding a dark walnut stain. I'll be following that with dark glaze to show off the details, and of course using my zebra brush to get into those tight areas. My client wanted to keep the antique look, so I'm excited to change it up and do something new, but be sure and check out my stories on my page for the progress this week.
Thank you, friends. Listeners, make sure you go check out their social media feeds. Mayor, just to be clear, tell us, what is low light photography?
Well, for me, it's that I take my photos in a very dark garage. So simply put, there's very little light. So low light. And I've kind of struggled with that through the years. And so I have come up with a few things, simple and basic tips. I'm not a photographer by any means. I haven't studied photography, but I have like kind of honed this for the challenges that I meet. I still feel like natural light is best. And if you have that, that is amazing. But in order for me, I do my work in my garage. And if I were going to bring the pieces back inside my home, that really doesn't work for me. It's not practical, you know. When I first started, I would use my front porch, which was amazing. But now, you know, we're in Connecticut, so sometimes it's harder to go through the driveway, through the walkway, up the steps to the porch. If it's a snowy day, you know, obviously you can't do that. So a few years back, my husband built me like a little staging wall. We have a three-car garage, and the first bay was unused, more of a storage area. So we have the staging wall and the staging floor right there. So that's much easier to get because I do the work out there as well. So then just kind of slide the piece over when it's ready to go. The only problem is it's very dark. And I think, you know, you want your piece to shine, especially if you're selling your piece. You want to give a true representation of the color. Staging and photographing really helps someone also see the piece in a homey situation where they think, I love that. I could put that here, you know. Yeah. So I think to get the best photo is really helps everyone all the way around. So for me, I've tried many things. I know, and you know, I know people that some of the best feeds use an iPhone, and they do it so well. So I'm not saying that you need any fancy equipment, but for me, I have to do things a little bit differently. So these tips kind of came from what I've learned.
So basically, low light photography is what it is. It's not a form of photography. It's probably identifying the problem with certain photography challenges, and that is just not having enough light.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because, you know, you talk to different people, and they you know, sometimes I've heard people say, you know, waiting for that light to come in the room to flood the room with the sunlight at least not necessarily directly on it, but just to fill the room with that natural light. And so that's, you know, and sometimes on a gloomy day, if there's not enough light, they'll bring out some, you know, some photography lights,
right.
But they're like, but there's just different. I want the
right.
natural lighting.
Exactly. Natural lighting is key if you have it. It's just amazing. So there's some ways around that, though, and that's kind of what I've found. So for me, I cannot use my phone. Mm-hmm. I just don't get enough light. So I use a digital camera, just a Canon, it's an old Canon. And definitely use a tripod. So whether you're using your phone or a digital camera, I would always say use a tripod so you don't get any kind of shake or movement to your pictures. So that's one simple fix for that. You can definitely use photography lights, and there are times when I have to pull those out, but it can change it. So if you are using it, I would say a great tip is to make sure you're using white light and not yellow light. There are times in my garage when, you know, I will open up the garage doors and the safety light up top comes on and it's yellow, and I'll take a photo and then I'm, you know, loading my photo saying, why does that look yellow? And I'm thinking, oh, it was on. The yellow light was on. That's why. So that's one thing I'm kind of careful of. So that helps. I would say if you can, you really should not use a flash because it can just change your color on your piece. You know, it can change a lot of the look of the piece. So I do try to avoid that. As I was saying about the photography lights, they can be used to even out, you know, uneven lighting. One tip I have for that is don't shine the light directly on your piece. Mm-hmm. Kind of go to the side or go to where you have uneven lighting and maybe shine it against the wall there. The key is to kind of even out the lighting. And still, even I look back on my feed and there are times when you can tell exactly where my light is coming from, because a lot of times one side of my pieces look a little more washed out, and, you know, nothing is ever perfect. And I kind of think, well, maybe that's unique to me. So people might know, oh, you know, that must be one of Mayor's pieces, because I can tell, or I would hope so. I don't know. But I also have learned how very simple ways to use my digital camera to get out of the auto setting. If you go to manual setting, and for visual learners, which I am, there's a highlight on my Instagram feed which features this, and I'm also happy to answer any specific questions. But what I work on, there's three different settings, one being your f-stop and one being your ISO, and all sounds very confusing and technical, but they, once you get them set, they can stay the same. And what I do is work on shutter speed to bring in more light. So the longer you keep your camera open, your lens open, the more light that it will pull through. And that's what I've found that has worked.
And that's why it's important to have a tripod too, because you don't want any movement. The more that shutter is opened,
it can detect movement.
That's a really good tip. Now, do you take your photos into any kind of application on your computer?
Yeah, well, I load them up onto my computer, and I usually do, you know, crop them back, because I'm shooting a much larger field than you see on the Instagram square. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm always cropping them, and, you know, the better I get, the less I need the editing apps. But, you know, I have a Mac, and you can edit on your Mac. But I also like Lightroom. Lightroom on my phone is a free app that you could go into and just make some changes. So some people have great luck with presets. And I think that's wonderful if you find a good one. But the goal is, if you're selling your pieces online or if you're on Etsy, you know, you kind of want someone to see the true color. So as long as you don't really alter the color much, or you definitely need a disclaimer with your customers and say, hey, you know, if you can't come take a look at this, I just want to, you know, let you know that we're kind of all bound by our screens, you know, so.
Yeah, and even if what you've done on your end can be different if somebody's monitor is not calibrated or their phone is set on a different mode.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Yeah.
Yeah, it's such a challenge, isn't it? Because it's like, you know, there's some fun aspects to photography, you know, what, and even some of the apps, like even for those that are taking their photographs on their phones, and then they open them up in an app and they make some, like you said, use some of the presets. I mean, they can really enhance the photograph. That's all good, just as long as the piece itself, when you see it in person, still looks just as good as what you've done to it, you know.
That's absolutely right. That's absolutely right. So just as long as a customer doesn't, you don't want any surprises, especially if you are shipping your pieces. You know, you don't want them to say, well, this isn't what I thought it would be.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
This is the wrong shade of blue, or this looked a little bit lighter. I'm not sure. You know.
I know.
So
yeah, because I know one of the trends in photography is going really light.
Yeah, a lot of brightness.
And that's great. It's just, you know, will your piece, you know, how does your piece look in person
compared to your photograph? Yeah,
exactly.
Right.
Yeah, that's so important. I mean, you have just provided so much insight, Mayor. We really appreciate you taking the time to give us these tips on photography. It's been a pleasure and honor to take time to recognize you and your talents as a refinisher. We have admired your work for some time, and it is good to get to know you a little better. We know our listeners will enjoy following you if they aren't already. How can they find you on social media?
Thank you so much. I'm certainly honored to be on the podcast and a feature. I'm very humbled and honored. So thank you. They can find me at Instagram, and it's at 100,000 welcomes, 100,000 welcomes. And I'm also on Facebook. I'm a little more active on Instagram. And so that's where you can definitely find me.
Yeah, I like that name. It's a name of gratitude. So that's
yes.
It's super nice. That's
yes,
very memorable,
exactly.
Too.
Thank you. Thank
you. Great. Well, thanks again, Mayor. We've enjoyed this. And listeners, make sure you go out to enjoyzebra.com and click on the blog, and you can see the feature on Mayor, and you can read more about her, and you can share that if you like, because we want people to get to know each other. This is an opportunity, this podcast and our blog is an opportunity to just put people on display and to just say thank you for the hard work that you've put into refinishing and helping grow the community. So make sure you go out and check her out. And also make sure you follow her on her social media feeds as well. I know she'll appreciate that. Well, you have a good day, Mayor, and go maybe work on a Helpa White piece, possibly.
Exactly. That's where I'll be laying for the
right.
For the foreseeable future.
Yeah, if anybody has any questions about Helpa White, Mayor is the one to go to.
Might be your girl. That's right.
All right.
Thank
well,
you.
I've enjoyed it. You take care.
Thanks so much.
It's time to celebrate the spring equinox in the Zebra Collective. Because spring is full of color, flowers, and sunshine, the opportunity to enter with your interpretation of a piece that looks like spring is wide open. We are excited for spring now more than ever as we look forward to bright days ahead. Any furniture refinishing beginning January 1st, 2021 through April 23rd, 2021 can be entered. A big thank you to our sponsors, Country Chic Paint, Olive and Fern, D. Lawless Hardware, The Golden Hour Art, and Zebra Paintbrushes. Make sure you tag your pieces with our hashtag, Zebra Collective. Announcing the April Zebra Review Contest. April's theme is pastels. As we transition from winter to spring, there is a bit of blending that takes place with colors. You take all the white and blues of winter, and then you mix that in with all the brilliant colors that start popping out on the trees and flowers, and well, you get pastels. We are super excited about this theme and as well about our sponsors. We have House and Canvas, D. Lawless Hardware, Surf Prep Sanding, and Zebra Paintbrushes. Any furniture piece painted in a single pastel color or multiple pastels from January 1st, 2021 through April 30th, 2021 can be entered simply by using the hashtag TheZebraReview. Make sure you enter. Our judging panel is eager. We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Zebra Blogs Before and After Furniture Refinishing Podcast. Today's episode is also featured on thezebrablog.com along with contact information for today's guest. Your comments and suggestions for future episodes are always welcome, and we encourage you to share those by clicking on the podcast slide in our header at thezebrablog.com. That's zebra with an I, blog.com. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and happy refinishing. Thank you.